Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Leona Abraham Brando, and I am the original founder of New Vision Organization, Inc., and the host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today we have with us Elizabeth Locke, who will be speaking on behalf of her husband, Anthony Locke. He is one of the Dallas 6 prisoners who has been incarcerated for over 17 years, in spite of the fact he was supposed to be released more than a decade ago. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the Dallas 6, they are 6 black males, including Anthony, who blew the whistle and took nonviolent action to stop the abuses going on in the prisons. Elizabeth is going to talk about the injustice her husband and others were and continue to be subjected to. Let's welcome Elizabeth. Elizabeth, are you on with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. Just continuously trying to deal with the system.
I know what you mean. It's been crazy. We are in a battle with the criminal justice that's going on in this country today. It's outrageous. It's injustice, and it's something that we want to hear about from you with your husband and what's been going on with you. Can you speak a little bit about your husband, the situation he's in now? I know that you mentioned something about him being in the hospital for some issue that recently arose.
Yes, he had pain in his leg, and you have to schedule medical appointments, so he wasn't supposed to go for a couple of days. If it wasn't for one of the officers that told them, you know, send him, he had to be rushed within 10 minutes after going to medical because of the clot, which he ended up going, like I said, last week to the hospital. So he currently has that issue. The medical care is horrible in PA prisons.
Okay.
Oftentimes, I'm constantly getting, his symptoms, trying to find out, because when he goes to medical, if he doesn't have some sort of questions or line of check this or check that, even though he doesn't know, they really don't do nothing but pass you over. So I usually have to talk to a nurse or somebody myself so he can ask the right questions to even get assistance.
Jeez. Can you tell us a little bit about how he ended up going into prison and a little bit about the Dallas 6 prisoners in general?
My husband is from North Philly. He's been in over 17 years. He went in for basically shooting a gun in the air. Nobody got hurt. And he received a 15 to 30 year sentence. And the former Attorney General, Ernest Prieto, we actually had consulted and hired prior to the Dallas 6 and also with the Dallas 6, who assessed the record and said he should have got a 5 to 8. But obviously, Philadelphia is one of the biggest cities in PA that has either extremely lengthy sentences, has out of approximately 450 juvenile lifers, I think 350, somewhere approximate, all come from Philadelphia. And recently, they're trying to rectify the issue. His particular judge is out in the limelight now, and they're trying to reverse cases because some of her practices of things that she said back, they caught her in 2011 saying certain inappropriate things, and there was a case, Daniel, I can't think of his name right now, the attorneys got her, she got recused from it because she was saying inappropriate things. And recently what's in the news is that she, her jury instructions is why they got the lengthy sentences, which we can't even fight it right now because he sees parole in March, and this is our third time. That's another discussion about how corrupt the parole system is. If we fight it now and you have open cases, the parole denies you. So we're going to fight it when hopefully he's home. As far as the Dallas 6, my husband and the other 5 men, they witnessed a lot of stuff inappropriately going on, abuse, starvation, different things going on in 2010 in SEI Dallas. And one of the guys, I think his last name was Santiago, he was in a restraint chair for over 16 hours. There was a case, Matthew Bullock, I believe his last name is, who had suicide. A lot of cases of things that they witnessed. They were all in solitary, which PA was throwing them in and basically leaving them for anything, petty stuff, whatever. And they, we had to all the families had to band together, make complaints to the DOJ, try to get things investigated because they were abusing solitary confinement. And a lot of people were stuck in a hole for like excessive amount of time. Andre Jacobs, one of the Dallas Sixers, one of them that was stuck in there for years, which I believe he's in population now. So they all took a stand from solitary, covered their door windows, which is a peaceful protest. They didn't do anything else. Obviously, they're stuck in the hole in their cell. And the prison, that was their way of trying to get attention, to get assistance, because obviously you can't do anything. You're stuck in the cell. And mm-hmm. the prison tried to charge them with riots, which would have got them 7 years felony additional time. They wasted almost 6 years trying to prosecute them with excessive amount of money. That's why I had to spend almost $13,000 hiring the former attorney general, somebody that wasn't afraid to fight the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, which I got some of those transcripts, very interesting, with the fact that they made up lies and all kinds of things, you know, that were coming out when we were in court. And like I said, that they dragged that out, that frivolous situation, almost 6 years for men that were sitting in solitary trying to get assistance from the hole on the abuses that were going on, which still go on to this day with the guards and different things in the prison. Obviously, medical is one that's very huge on not getting the proper medical care. And I think Mumia's case, he's constantly bringing to light the medical treatment and the recent one that he went about the hepatitis C. So the medical is a big issue. You know, I don't even know where to begin.
Is your husband still at Dallas, or is he in another prison now?
No. Right after that incident, that was April 29, 2010, they moved my husband to SEI Retreat, and the men went to different prisons after that. He spent several years at SEI Retreat and didn't go to SEI Monahoy until March 2016. Pretty much all the prisons have the same types of issues. He's had a lot of retaliation at the previous jail, especially because he was at the Dallas Six. And I think we both think that that affected, and I know it affected the parole, and he's out now, and that's Carrington Keys.
I know a lot of those prisons, even judges, I know that there were some judges that were actually called down because there was one judge that I guess he was taking bribes and sentencing juveniles to life sentences. But also,
oh, yes, that's our county. That was Luzerne County. That was Judge Cervarella, and I can't remember the other guy's name.
I remember reading about that and hearing about it. Also, SCI, Smithville, SCI, Huntington, Greaterford, a lot of those prisons there, especially SCI Smithfield, they had three alleged suicides in a matter of 3 months back in 2007 and 2008. And Andrew, Joe Kappa, Joe Holquin, and also Clifford Finney, three of them that had died that year. And there was nothing that was really being done about it when people were trying to get help for them. But this is something that goes on in not only Pennsylvania, but also Massachusetts and other prisons, especially Commonwealth states, which is Pennsylvania is Commonwealth and also Massachusetts. But a lot of these things are going on needing to be addressed. So your husband right now, what's the status with him? Is he, you say he's going up for parole again soon?
For the third time, and mind you, we went March, like a year ago, we went the first time. He had a job signed by the president of the True Value. I bought a home. I work for the Commonwealth and for a commissioner. I have been in the military. We have all the supports. He's taken paralegal, child psychology, businessman. He's taken classes, prepared. They still denied him. So we put in for reconsideration. We got seen in September. They still denied him, gave him 6 months. I mean, he's done everything. This is another – that's a whole other argument that when these guys are doing everything they're supposed to and they're still denying them parole. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this go round, because in 6 months he's also got himself into a CDL class. He completed prior to that a forklifting class, 6 months, all these extra job, you know, things that he can do, you know, to get jobs. And where I live, you know, there's a lot of, you know, warehouses and that type of work. On top of that, we already had him a job, which is not even easy to get, you know, as a felon. We had everything lined up, so they're still denying. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
I find that very, you know, inappropriate. When again, there are prisoners who have some kind of support out there that will have productive, you know, jobs and employment and everything. And in this case, he has a family. He has a family who's apparently well connected with the support, being in the military and everything, and having a job waiting for him. To me, this is something that for them not to release him, this is something that I would consider, as you say, retaliation, and it's inappropriate what they're doing. I think that when we talk of mass incarcerations in the United States, these are the kind of cases they have to look at, or should look at, to give a quick release, because there's no reason why anyone should be in for 17 years being denied parole all these times and having a wife, having a family, you know, having a job waiting for him and everything else. So
and
what would
the
be the
jail
next
recommendation? He's had the jail recommendation already both times across the board. He's done everything he was supposed to do, and they still deny it. And that's so frustrating because, like he says, it's like a setup because you go in there and they expect more, but yet he shouldn't even have got that type of sentence. So when they look even the slight frustration from it, they use it against them and then say they're minimizing something when they're not. Like, they're doing everything, and he's only one. Like I said, the other mother of one of the Dallas Six, Chandra Delaney, she'll tell you the same thing. We know numerous of cases in PA that go 3, 4, 5 times, just like they did to her son in one of the other Dallas Six. And my husband said that he had a different parole agent the first go around and got assigned somebody that was familiar with the case, which to me was biased. But what can you do? There's no rights because it's a privilege. We tried to ask around. We talked to the former attorney general. You don't have a lot of rights. You're not allowed representation unless they're already out and they violate. You can't have a lawyer. It's just whatever. The first go-round, he had 3 ladies that seemed judgmental. The second go-round, he had 2 men. We don't know what we're going to get this third go-round. And it's almost like a no-win situation. It's always three, four, five plus times.
I find there are some corrupt judges out there. I found there's a couple, even in Massachusetts, that I found recently, denying a prisoner every right, as well as the prison itself, the officials denying the prisoner all of his rights, and then having the judge, you know, going along with the defendants. But the thing is, Pennsylvania prisons, as I say, it's not just there, but is there any way that the audience, anyone, could be of any help at all in making calls or helping on behalf of this situation?
I could probably draft some kind of Google Doc that could be signed. I think that's what Chandra did to help get her son the parole. I'm not familiar with how to do that, but I can probably do that and then share it with you. Because
okay,
I think that's
be,
how she reached out and had everybody sign some kind of Google Doc because they kept denying him. And the Dallas Six is part of it because, like I said, they took the parole agent that was assigned to him and he says, I got somebody from Dallas. And it's like then they bring that stuff up and they're not supposed to. You know what I mean? It's like this stuff comes up. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of talk also about parole reform, and I'm strongly for that. I am definitely for that because the parole boards consist of the very people that want the prisoners to remain inside. I don't think that, first of all, law enforcement should be involved in parole, the parole board. I don't believe that family members of the victims, and I sympathize with them, but at the same time, whoever may be on that parole board as far as family members, as far as law enforcement, I think they need to have independent people, citizens in the communities. I think they have to have a diversified parole board. I don't think it should be all one race. And there's a lot of things that need to be changed with the parole system because I believe that's why a lot of prisoners are still inside. People go in They're part of the parole board. They're already biased. They already have their decisions made up. And it's not fair for the person or the people that are incarcerated that have, as you say with your husband, that has done so much good while he's been inside, has done so much to better himself and to, you know, to be productive if he comes out into the communities. So I think they need to work on reestablishing a decent parole board.
I agree with you, and you don't have rights. Like I said, I've called myself. I live in Harrisburg, so I'm right here where the main offices are between the prison and the parole, and they get you. I've actually had one yell at me talking about we had no rights. It's a privilege. They can do this and they can do that. That's a problem to me. Another issue that came up, and I discussed this with Chandra and other people, because, like I said, the parole would be the next issue to fight in a system that's keeping the men wrongfully extended, you know, long sentences, is the fact that they'll make them take a class or two, or they call them the programs. They don't give them the programs until the end, or sometimes they get skipped, so then they'll deny them, saying they didn't get in the program. Okay, they get in the program. These classes are archaic course material from God only knows when. They had like a wheel, and the guys asked my husband, it was one white one and one black one, and they asked him, okay, I'll let you out right now if you can tell me the wheel. Okay, my husband sent me the wheel, and I go to Penn State. I take those classes. I didn't even understand how would a man explain that. He's had to make two additional appointments with the educational person that taught the class, who even admitted that the stuff was outdated because he taught the class so they could understand it. But when parole asks you something like that and then denies them because they can't explain that, so that's their denial, like they didn't learn anything when they did, is ridiculous. The head of the parole in the Philly caucus meeting with the secretary of the prison, that was October 11th, and he was like, oh, yeah, they have to be able to show that they learned something from the class and how it's going to help them. But when you get asked by the member of the board at the hearing, tell me how about the wheel, and you're looking at a picture, and you don't even know how to explain that to these men when it's broken down equality or this or that or whatever the wheel, I wouldn't even have known how to answer that.
Mm-mm.
Like, to me, that's insulting that you're expecting them to explain that when that's not even how. And some of the teachers are biased, too, which is another reason they get denied, because my husband was in a class with a woman, and he had to get removed from that. He had put in to get out of that because she was judgmental.
The
guy
problem.
Taught it different and didn't see no color, no race, no what you're in there, but to teach them what the purpose of the program was, and he did excellent with it, except for this dumb wheel that was part of the material that the parole happened to pick one stupid thing outdated to use against him. So he made two appointments to have the guy explain how he can explain this to the board. That is ridiculous. That's how much he's trying to do what he has to do to come home.
The system is set up to make them fail. It's not about rehabilitation. I know not only in Pennsylvania, even in Massachusetts and other states, the system is set up to prevent them from doing well. There was a prisoner right here in Massachusetts, had a job. The prison officials went over his instructor's head to have him fired. That's how desperate they were, you know, to prevent him from having a calculator in order to take higher educational correspondence courses. There's so much going on, and the lawyers, you have lawyers out there that are really good, and then you have some lawyers that are just as bad as the prison officials, the Department of Corrections, people that are trying to suppress them. And this is where it's sad, too, because lawyers or civil rights lawyers or whomever should be out there trying to help these prisoners to be able to do something with them with themselves when they're getting rejected, denied, provoked, harassed, whatever it might be. It's not right.
I agree, and people also need to not be afraid. They scare people to stand up for their family. I met so many family members that are afraid to call or write a letter because they're fearful of retaliation. And the time I've dealt with my husband, I only had one incident that the one woman tried to get away with when I fought trying to remove a detainer from Philly that would hold him if he got parole, that was sitting there as a legacy warrant, as they call it. It took me months and months of digging and going and calls back and forth to Philly to get it removed. There was no assistance from the lady. She talked to me like I was uneducated. I wrote a letter. I documented it, what I wouldn't tolerate, to central office and the superintendent. She got pissed off. They actually got my husband, picked him up, took him, got the paper that removed the warrant so that he wouldn't be detained, you know, when we got parole. This is all the pre-stuff I did before we got to the parole. And the lady, when he got back and it didn't touch his hands, because he was escorted by two sheriffs or whoever they were, it went straight to the lady in records. It disappeared miraculously. And then she thought we were dumb and we wouldn't get away with it, or she would get away with it. No, I got a personal phone call that it was rectified. They had to contact the judge and get a new one because she tried to spike that. That was the only time I ever had retaliation done, because I go through the chain of command and cover my tracks across the board. But people are scared. I think they need more classes on educating people on how to do it, and more people need to stand up and make the emails and the phone calls and be consistent with it. They don't. That's why they're getting away with this.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people, they may have been afraid at one time, families, family members, the prisoners, but they're not anymore, because they're being persecuted regardless of whether they speak out or not. So a lot of them feel they might as well speak out if they're going to be persecuted anyway, if they're going to be, you know, mistreated, abused, deprived, whatever it might be. So they're speaking out. The problem we have in this country is the biases, you know, and these social statuses, and these people that work for the penal system that think that they can speak to the family members as well as the prisoners, look down upon them, mistreat them. And that's ignorance, because a lot of people with that attitude are the very people that have caused the prisoners to fall in the first place. There are prisoners who were victims before becoming offenders. There were prisoners
exactly.
who were doing really well before becoming offenders. And it's people like that, with those biases, with those attitudes, those ignorant attitudes, that have caused many to fall. And they're still doing it now, as you say, with the way they treated even you.
Yes.
And it's to degrade you. And all the things that you have done, being in the military, doing all these things, you deserve more than that, just like your husband deserves more than that, because even though he's a prisoner, he still is a citizen of the United States who has done so well before going in. And then being in for a nonviolent, especially, to go in and have to deal with all this.
The laws are crazy. Even, like I said, a whole nother topic, because I got a young son that I learned a lot about the juveniles. PA is really corrupt on what they deem to get them in the system and use things that code. Like, my son was young. He was young, and these two white boys end up trying to call them the N-word. So my son's friend was going to smash the kid's phone or take it or do something, and my son held the backpack. Well, they charged them with robbery for that, for holding a bag. And
that's
this is the stuff you got to watch. We had lawyers because the other kid's parents, the one was a pastor, and they hired, like, the best lawyer in PA, and it dropped out. But what I learned over the years, even though it gets dismissed, they have a long laundry list that they keep bringing up, and then I wondered why they keep judging, because it doesn't go away. They bring it back up like they're trouble and read what they originally were charged for. The laws start with the juveniles. If you want to fix that part, it starts there, probably in most states, but I know in PA for sure. And they use it. Like my husband, they gave him 5 extra years for a fight when he was age 14, that they gave him 5 years time because that was under aggravated assault, but yet he's defending his life.
Mm-mm.
Age 14. And they brought it up in parole, which I don't even know if that's legal. That was the first time we went up. They brought something from age 14 from a fight.
Jeez.
A fight, a typical fight, and he's in North Philly.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me or really upsets me, too, is the fact that some people get away with it. Their kids get away with it because of who they are, the connections they have, the race that they are, the cultures that they are, the social statuses, you know, and As I said, I interviewed Joe Kay not too long ago on the book he wrote. It was The Crime of Impunity, The Crime of Punishment. And it was all about the wealthy, how they get away with so much. They're not helping their kids,
yeah.
really. Their kids are going to do worse as they go along because there's no respect for the father or mother or anyone. But the problem is it's all about who you know, and it's all about what you have as far as money goes or anything like that. And they need to
that
do something.
That is true.
They need to do something about it.
I worked for one of the psychologists that in Harrisburg, all the juveniles got referred for the so-called juvenile probation report when the kids got in trouble. And it sickened me to see that these kids, the school was part of it. So that school-to-prison pipeline, that's a true statement. I've seen it myself with the amount of kids from ages 9 and up that might have had a learning disability or a problem or behavior, and the parents, you know, they're all struggling, you know, in the community and whatnot, and these kids are ending up on juvenile probation. Once they get you in the system, they use it against you, and it follows.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
follow.
Another issue.
It does follow. And the Coreys, they prevent prisoners, whether they're youth or adult prisoners, they prevent them from getting jobs and doing the things that they would normally be doing once they're released. Or even if they just got in trouble and didn't go to jail, just to be involved in the court system.
And they lie, too. When my son was young, the juvenile probation, she ended up sitting there. My son was sick because he got depressed and everything because one of the young guys got killed that we were close to. And we had doctor. He was losing weight and everything. I had the doctor notes, gave it to the probation. But yet we are in this little juvenile thing with the master, as they call it, which is like a head lawyer or whatever, that becomes the master judge that for the juvenile. And she's lying, so I raised my hand. I mean, because you're really not supposed to speak, but he let me speak. And I said, no, she has the notes, yada, yada, yada. So he asked her, and she's like, did she report that? Oh, yes, she did. He said, well, why are you telling me, you know, like as if he didn't go to school, and it's not excuse. Well, I got this from the school, but did she report that? Yes, she did. I have the note. Well, this is not what she presented. The parents got to pay attention. Like I said, it's so many things I could tell you that between my husband, my son, the communities, the probation, the parole, the schools are involved. You have to advocate everybody. People got to really pay attention to the laws and what's going on.
Yes. Yes. The laws. The laws and what's going on. The laws are not. The laws are either black and white, and sometimes they're so crooked that people don't know which path to take. And unfortunately, a lot of them get placed in prisons for either taking the wrong path or being set up to make it look like they took the wrong path. And Elizabeth, I'd like to do a second series next Monday, if possible, if you'd be available to come on with us again and talk more about these issues.
Yes.
I think it's very important. You have a lot of experience and knowledge based on not only what your experiences are, but also your experiences with your husband being incarcerated. And I'm hoping that through these discussions and through the awareness that you're bringing to the public and others are bringing, that maybe something different will happen, because this has got to stop. It has, even with, as I say, with lawyers, there's a lot of lawyers out there that are not doing their job. And I had one lawyer recently trying to get help for a prisoner. He was asking who the prisoner murdered. This was a case of fatality, a first-time offender that had committed a fatal offense. And he wanted to know who the prisoner was before he'd take the case. He took the case. He met with the prisoner one time. He brought a young attorney with him and charged the woman $4,500 for that one visit to the prison.
Oh, no.
Norman Zelkine. He's an attorney in Massachusetts. So these are the kind of things that prevent the justice from being done as well. But we'd like to once again thank you, Elizabeth, for being on with us. And we hope to see interview you and be with you next Monday, same time at 11:30. And we want to thank Elizabeth for being with us, for bringing some awareness, and hopefully she'll be bringing much more next week. Elizabeth, thank you for being on with us, and I do hope
thank
to
you for having me. And I tell everybody, like I said, reach out to somebody. you know, ask some questions and don't be afraid to stand up. I mean, but pay attention in your community. Like I said, that's been my best. And also don't be afraid, because they protect me. Standing up has helped my husband more than not doing it and being afraid. And they pretty much know. I've even had a couple of guards joke around, don't mess with her because she knows who to call or whatever. Don't be afraid of that. You just have to learn how to do it.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
But have a blessed one.
You too.